Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 33 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. The Second Amendment podcast is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weirdbeard, and with me, as always, is my wonderful, lovely, spectacular, and fine-smelling hostess, Aaron Paulette. How are you doing, Aaron?
Well, as you have told people, my farts do smell like vanilla ice cream.
And you have excellent choices of perfume, was what I was alluding to.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I never heard anything about it until now, so I just thought you were doing the typical guy thing of not noticing. But thank you very much.
I remember complimenting you at the Airbnb in Dallas that, you've got an excellent smelling perfume on right now. And you told me the name of it, but I'm a dude, so I didn't remember.
I don't remember that. I do remember you telling me the story about how you bumped my boob and you felt all self-conscious about it, and therefore complimenting me on the quality of my prosthesis.
Absolutely true. I was carrying your bags, because I am a gentleman, into the room, and the cocked elbow trying to get it through the door frame, and my elbow jabbed you right in the boob, and, I mean, all guys listening, we've all been there. You accidentally poke somebody in the boob. Women are used to
it.
It
wasn't a jab. It was more of a brush.
Yeah. But it was definitely not a jab. But yeah, you make accidental contact, and if you don't make a big deal of it, nobody cares. You know, it was an accident. I'm so sorry. And I had that exact feeling of God, I did that. Oh, I'm so. And I realized, wait a second, those are not the boobs she was born with. And so I had to bring it up, and I'm like, okay, they are so good that I felt guilty.
Why, thank you. So wrestling this back onto some degree of normalcy, I am proud to admit that our long statewide nightmare is finally over. It's taken basically 2 weeks and a whole lot of recounts, but we finally have an officially declared governor and senator. And so Ron DeSantis won, just like we thought he did 2 weeks ago. But the important part is that his opponent conceded. And a little more surprisingly, Bill Nelson finally conceded the victory to Rick Scott. So that's hopefully good news for gun owners in Florida. The potentially bad news, we're not sure, is that Nikki Fried did win Commissioner of Agriculture. I'm not too worried about it at this point because, as I said, we have a theoretically pro-gun governor, a theoretically pro-gun legislature in Florida. We should be okay. We'll see. This is one of those instances where it's really not likely to affect me because I already have mine, and I know that it's a lot easier to renew a license than it is to get one for the first time. So there is some concern for people who don't have their carry permit yet that there might be some shenanigans and hijinks in trying to get it, but, well, we'll see.
I think it'll be a lot harder to do it under the nose of a governor who hopefully will not put up with such nonsense.
Yes, exactly. That was my main concern, really, because Gillum was stridently anti-gun. And so if he got elected and we had she never really ran very much on whether she was pro or anti-gun. I'm just making a assumption here. But if she turned out to be anti-gun, like I figured, and there was an anti-gun governor, then the Department of Agriculture could start denying a lot of these permits for reasons.
Yeah. They could say weapons hot on shenanigans.
Yeah. And so it's a pretty good result as these things go. So I don't think you had any recount shenanigans in your state.
No, though. Everybody got their butts kicked. It was like alarmingly landslidey. Like, including the ballot questions. Like, there was one ballot initiative that was on hospital staffing. It was supposed to be, there was going to be, the government would step in and say that there were mandatory staffing requirements for hospitals. And I voted against it because, you don't want to have a bunch of lawyers who are too stupid to go into private practice, so they got elected. Be managing hospitals. That's not what you do. I don't go to my mechanic and say, ask him to do heart surgery on me. He works on my car. There was tons of money getting thrown around on it, and they referred to it as the most contentious ballot question, and it just got stomped. It went away. So I was very pleased with that. It was all like wide open, including like Elizabeth Warren. Like, she walked away with it, and I did not expect that. Like, I at least expected her to take a tough fight, because she just made like so many campaign foibles during the lead up on it that I thought, like, all right, even like the lefties who support her have got to be like, ugh. Because, I mean, we saw it happen to Hillary Clinton. A whole bunch of people just went, oh, God, she is awful. I may be left wing and I may hate Trump and I may not want to vote for Trump, but I can't knowingly pull the lever for her.
So hopefully we're not going to talk about elections again for two more years. And I look forward to that. But there is something that happened during the election, or maybe right before it. It was a very, very sneaky thing where I'm just going to be vague and say a Congress critter. I think it was a representative from New Jersey. And, you know, all good gun laws come from New Jersey.
Sure do.
And he introduced, yes, here it is. He's a congressman because it is H.R. 7115. And that is colloquially termed the Ban Everything Bill. And that was introduced right before the election, and it didn't get a lot of notice at the time, but we're noticing now, aren't we weird?
Yeah.
Okay, so the actual name for it is the 3D Firearms Prohibitions Act. Although, when you read the bill, it really doesn't have much to do about 3D firearms. It really has to do with assembling guns from 80% lowers, stripped lowers, things like that.
I mean, castings and receiver blanks are listed. So, I mean, I know that I was friends with Wally from York Arms back when he was still in Maine. He since moved to Arizona and is no longer an FFL. He was making AR-15s, and he specifically got receiver blanks for his business. They were essentially blocks of aluminum shaped in the vague shape of an AR-15, because he wanted that curve for where the buffer tube screws in the blank. He didn't want to cut it from a square block, because when you heat treat it with that curve in there, the crystals kind of go around the curve, and you have less of a risk of snapping at the buttstock on the receiver. So they are roughly AR shaped chunks of aluminum. They're not 80%. I don't even know what percent they are. I mean, really, the percentage is just kind of a guesstimate, as far as I'm aware of, for when they pick out what is the percentage and what is and isn't a firearm. But these are the furthest from a firearm. But when you pick them up and you're a gun nut, you go, oh yeah, no, that's an AR-15.
So the abstract, the introduction of H.R. 7115 is to prohibit the sale, acquisition, distribution, and commerce or import into the United States of certain firearm receiver castings or blanks, assault weapon parts kits, and machine gun parts kits, and the marketing or advertising of such castings or blanks and kits on any medium of electronic communications, to require homemade firearms to have serial numbers, and for other purposes.
Ba bum ba.
Yeah, that's not terrifyingly vague at all, is it?
No, not at all. What? We of course all know what those other purposes could be, right? I mean, especially when you read the bill and see what it does. Like I said, the castings. So it could be just a vaguely gun-shaped thing, and they're going to consider that a gun. That's like those novelty grenades that always show up on the TSA Twitter feed, on the little just cast grenade shape that people make into lamps or just use as paperweights and things like that. It's just a chunk of cast iron shaped like a pineapple grenade. It's not a grenade. It's shaped like a grenade. You couldn't even make it into a grenade without as much machining as it would take to make anything into a grenade. But it looks like a grenade, so therefore it must be one.
I'm reminded of a joke product I've seen where it's just a square aluminum block and it's marketed as a 0% AR
receiver. I've seen those too. I think that was off a April Fool's joke for a gun maker, I believe.
Yeah, and okay, we're being ridiculous here, and it would be a stretch, but it wouldn't be that much of a stretch for the bill to apply to that.
Well, all one needs to do is go to the Royal Nunsuch YouTube channel. This guy he's a young kid. I think he's down in Florida. I know he's done a bunch of work with Serbu Arms. I don't know if he is in Florida or just goes down to Florida occasionally to work with them, but he started off just as a regular guy, just making personal firearms as you do. He's since gotten an SOT, so he's making machine guns and suppressors now, which is really hilarious because he is just clutches guns together and like will make like slam fire shotguns that are essentially two pipes that fit into each other with a fixed firing pin. They sell like, as the joke goes, they sell 80% Sten guns at Home Depot in the plumbing section.
So here's what I found really interesting about this bill. First of all, it purports to be about 3D guns, and it's not. It's all about targeting the hobbyists. And Sebastian had a really interesting point on that on his gun blog. What? It's no longer PA Gun Blog. It's no longer Snowball. Shall not be questioned. Thank you. And he put forth a very interesting theory, which makes a lot of sense, is that they are really attacking the culture because it doesn't prohibit the purchase of a ready-made firearm. It prohibits the sale and therefore the purchase of these kits. And so they're targeting the true believers first. Mm-hmm. And so the casual firearm owner who goes to a shop and buys a gun isn't going to be affected by this, but by attempting to outlaw the home making of these things by the enthusiasts, you're trying to quell their enthusiasm. It's I think the legal term is a chilling effect. Mm. And so you go after the hardcore first so that it's a lot easier to make further restrictions later on. The other thing that I found very interesting is that they aren't going after handguns with this. I mean, the text does mention semi-auto pistols, but you can tell specifically by context that they are talking about the pistol version of rifles.
I would disagree
and
with that.
Not just your handgun.
It absolutely does go after the pistol version of rifles. So if you have an AR pistol or an AK pistol or any such pistol, it absolutely goes after those. But one of the statements is it is simply, so for the rifles, we might want to get more into that. I'll save the rifles for after we're done with this. But for pistols, it defines a semi-automatic pistol that is affected by this as a semi-automatic pistol with a removable magazine, aka all of them, and then unless you've got like a Steyr-Hahn? What was that fixed magazine gun? There's a couple of them that accepts a detachable magazine and has at least one feature. And it's got the barrel shroud and foregrip and, you know, things like that, that would all, a magazine that doesn't go into the pistol grip. Those are all would target, you know, Tech 9 type guns as well as ARs, but also a threaded barrel. So all of the quote unquote tactical versions of a gun, you know, the CZ-75 tactical, the Glock, does Glock have factory threaded barrels? I know you could get them by putting a Lone Wolf threaded barrel on your Glock. It's now suddenly a banned firearm.
I am not sure if they sell them OEM. I think that's aftermarket only.
But everybody else and their mother sells a suppressor ready gun.
Okay, I had actually missed that, but you are correct. It doesn't ban all handguns, but the handguns that have a threaded barrel, that's a problem.
And it's not even that. It's, if you have a 1911 with a threaded barrel, so low capacity, single stack gun, but if it's got a threaded barrel, it's an assault weapon.
I mean, that is easily fixable by replacing the barrel. I understand that a lot of gunnies will have a problem with that, and that's fine. It's completely understandable. It is a fairly easy fix, and again, I am surprised that they are not using this opportunity to crack down more on handguns. But they are definitely going after the semi-auto rifles and shotguns. Mm-hmm,
because they define that as any semi-auto rifle and shotgun that accepts a detachable magazine. So gone are those exemptions for your semi-auto hunting guns. Gone are those exemptions for your 10/22. Gone are the exemptions for the Bill Ruger's Mini 14 series. Essentially, you cannot, like, this is... Massachusetts, in my summation, has the worst assault weapons ban in all the country because our AG won't even tell you what is banned. And you cannot get, absolutely cannot get an AR receiver of anything. This will actually be worse than that. And so if you're anyplace else, it will get worse.
So I might have missed something, but this doesn't ban Benelli's, does it? Because those are semi-auto, but they're tube-fed.
Yes.
And it specifically says capacity to accept a detachable ammunition feeding
device. Correct. And so, yeah, you're the standard shotgun tube, a lever-action rifle type tube, even though lever actions would be exempted from this. You're even something like a Marlin Model 60, where... Yes, the magazine comes out of it, but the magazine body is attached to the gun. It's essentially not a detachable magazine. Yes, that mm-hmm. would be fine. That would be exempted. So shotguns overall, because there aren't a ton of magazine-fed semi-auto shotguns. There's a bunch. Remington and Mossberg both have released magazine-fed versions of their 870 and 500 series.
Right, but those are pump action.
They have not yet released a semi-auto version. If they did, it would be considered this. So really, this is mm-hmm. going after the Saiga and those couple of various Turkish guns that are really, really cool, but I actually have never shot one.
So it does seem like a couple of ratchets on the Overton window.
Yeah, well, so... I linked in the show notes a video from a fellow Massachusetts native, Liberty Doll. I almost think that she shoots at my club. She was describing her club, and it's like, that sounds like my club, but I have not bumped into her yet. But she was giving the overview of it and was mentioning the fact that overall, the name of the game is just like if you're listing a gun up on your local forum, you're willing to get rid of it for $550. You don't list it as $550. You list it at, for $600, $650 or best offer in hopes that someone will make a best offer that's higher than $550. This is probably an overshot and they're willing to compromise, if you will, for this. But the bottom line is nobody submits a bill that they would be terrified of if it passed with flying colors. Now, I wouldn't put up my Jennings J22. I would not list it on a Massachusetts gun board that I'm willing to sell that for $1,000 because, oh my God, if somebody bid at that, I would not be able to sleep at night. You just bought a Jennings for $1,000. I feel so bad for you. But
you didn't make them buy it.
That's true. But again, nobody does something that they don't want. Nobody asks for something that they don't want to happen. So no matter what happens with this, and hopefully this will just be strangled in its crib.
Well, like Liberty Doll said, and by the way, she is adorable. She can play me in the TV movie about my life. But she figures what's going to happen is this is, yes, a deliberate overreach. And it's done with the full knowledge that it will be shut down because, well, it'll probably pass the House, but it won't pass the Senate. Mm-hmm. And it's done as a virtue signal so that in later elections, the anti-gun crowd can say, oh, look, we tried to pass this law. We tried to do it for the children. And the evil gun-loving conservatives shot it down.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably won't pass. But hey, let's not risk it. Contact your Congress critter and bug them about it. In fact, I'm going to include in the show notes a really handy link by the Firearms Policy Coalition where all you have to do is put in your name and address and it will mail it to your Congress critters automatically. It'll do all the lookup for you. So you do need to pester them. Just let's not take any chances. It probably won't pass, but this is what they want. Let's not give them any traction at all.
But that's also what we need to remember is this is what they want. They want to absolutely gut the Second Amendment. And honestly speaking, do you think reading how wanton this bill is that this is where they would stop? No. I mean, if they do not care about your $2,000 Browning BAR hunting rifle, not the machine gun, if they do not care about, you know, a 3-shot hunting rifle, but because it's gas operated and the magazine comes out, nope, we're going to declare that an assault weapon. Yeah, no, there is no sanctuary here. They want to take them all.
Yeah, and this is just slightly off topic, but I think it's relevant. You no doubt have noticed over the past week or so that there has been a brouhaha by a certain California congressman, a Swalwell, I think, who casually mentioned, and he later claimed to have been joking sarcastically, and to my mind, that makes it worse, about how gun owners who refused to turn in or sell their guns to the government and who decided to go to war with the government over it would be nuked.
Mm.
Now, I don't think for a moment that he would actually have the balls to do that, but still, the fact that a sitting congressman is making jokes about using nuclear devices on the citizenry is really, really bad. And I'm not claiming that all people do that, but just the fact that he thought it was acceptable is just... I think it's a case of the mask has slipped.
Mm. Well, you see it a lot also with the various memes. I haven't seen them in a little while, but for a while they were going real hot and heavy on the, oh, you're got your AR-15 to fight against tyranny from the U.S. government. Look what the U.S. government has. And they'd have like pictures of tanks and predator drones and battleships and things like that. And you could just tell that's them fantasizing of the, oh, one of these days, the U.S. government will rise up and wipe out these people that I hate for me.
Yeah, so I feel like this bill is a lesser version of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying to attack the gun culture. And maybe I'm just being a little bit Pollyanna-ish, but let's send them a strong message that we aren't going to stand for it.
Well, I think overall, when this literally just wipes ARs completely off the table, and that is like the best-selling gun in America. I mean, there's probably more AR-15, you know, variants out there than there are 10-22s.
Yeah. Well, again, this isn't yet outlawing ARs. It's just outlawing the building and also the repair, because if your gun breaks, you can't order the parts. You have to... I don't know. You'd have to maybe send it back to the manufacturer. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, but it also makes just having a spare barrel a crime.
Yeah, it's and I get a chance to make a very geeky reference. The slow blade penetrates the shield.
Mm.
Oh, I know that. Mm, that's what you do when you don't know what I just
I
said,
don't.
But you don't want to admit it.
Aaron, you know me too well. God damn it.
So it's a reference to Frank Herbert's Dune, where there were personal shields that would deflect bullets and things that went in with a high velocity, like if you're trying to slash someone, you're attacking them with a sword, but the phrase that is used in training, the slow blade penetrates the shield, is that if you have a knife and you can just slowly slide it up under the ribs, you can penetrate the shield. And so the point I was making is that if you're slow and underhanded, you might be able to pass this restriction under the eyes of people who would be paying attention for something far more overt.
I gotcha. I don't think that was referenced in any of the movies. And I must say, I started Dune like on 3 separate occasions and I just could not get through it.
Are you talking about the David Lynch version or the sci-fi miniseries?
Yes. I love them both. Specifically the David Lynch director's cut.
But you said you've started them. It sounds like you
No. The novel. The novel is what I've started but haven't finished.
Oh, okay.
I started reading the book going, oh man, this book I've heard so much about. And I'd seen the David Lynch movie as a kid. And I'm just and just thought it was cool, you know, sandworms and dudes drinking their pee in the desert. that left a long lasting impression with me. So I said, oh, I'll read this. My dad had a copy of it, just, you know, kicking around the house. And I'm like, cool, start reading it. Get like 40 pages in. And I'm like, all right, I'm it. Tap out. I'm done. I can't do any more. And then watched like the sci-fi miniseries. And oh, my God, that was good. And I went, all right, let's try this again. I really want to read the source material for this, and just tapped out again.
I think part of the problem is that Frank Herbert hits you with a lot of really difficult concepts that are explained in the glossary, mm-hmm. in the dictionary, in the back, and people don't like flipping to the back. And I actually think the best way to do this, now that we have the technology, would be to read it with a hyperlink, where if you go, I don't know what that word means, but there's a link to it, and you click on it, and you get a pop-up that explains, that it would make reading this dense text a lot easier. Once you get the background history and understand the concepts he's throwing around, it's easier to get through. But yeah, those first few chapters are difficult. I had the same problem you did.
Or I could snort a whole bunch of spice and become a mentat, and then I'd be just fine. And my eyes would become glowing blue.
Okay, I'm sure there are going to be people who are more familiar with the canon that are going to jump in here. The spice does not make someone a mentat. The spice makes you a navigator that allows you to fold space and time. Mentats are people who have been bred to have near calculator style brains, plus they drink something. I don't remember the name. I'm sure there will be people far geekier than I am who jump in, but there's some sort of thing that they drink which stains their lips.
I thought that had spice in it as well.
If we just look it up, that'll be it. But if we leave it hanging, there are going to be people who say, I cannot let this stand, and they will write in and give us feedback and tell us in no uncertain terms whether or not spice is in the Mentat energy drink. So I'm going to deliberately leave that hanging, because I know if there's one thing nerds can't stand, because I am one, is someone being incorrect on the internet. So, hey, folks, if I'm incorrect here on the internet, you let us know.
Go to Assorted Calibers podcast on the on Facebook and start a thread.
We started off all serious and political, and then I steered us straight into the dirty weeds.
Oh, let's have fun. Come on. It's a holiday week, and if you're a patron, I'm going to try to get this out before Thanksgiving. So if you guys are driving anywhere for Thanksgiving, hopefully you'll be hearing us for this. So, yeah, let's have a little fun.
Well, you know, we've already released the film track Thanksgiving a couple days early. They've got something to listen to.
Yeah. Actually, I want to talk a little bit about the patron group, because this is not me plugging. Again, if you're listening to this and you're not paying us money, that's fine. The podcast is free. It's supposed to be free. We don't expect anything from you, but we do like to give a little bit extra to those who give a little bit extra. So
we love you, patrons.
We do. We love you, patrons, and we want to give you good stuff. So like once a month, I spin out a blooper reel. That is all the stuff that Aaron and I are doing that either gets cut out in the middle of us yelling at each other and saying horrible things, or us bantering before and after the show about whatever comes to our minds. And so it's kind of become a podcast in itself. It usually runs longer than this show every month. We also have the film tracks, which is we help you time up a movie with the podcast. And so as you're watching the movie, you're listening to us also watch the movie. And this month it's Thanksgiving, which I had not seen before I hit play on my player. So you got to hear my reaction to seeing this low budget, lighthearted horror movie about a homicidal turkey. And oh my God, it's hilarious. I highly recommend it. And then also we have a higher tier level of the essentially what you get for those plus an early release of the podcast is 99 cents an episode, a buck an episode. For an extra dollar, you get an extra episode every month. And that is our mag dump. And that is our freeform round table. It's uncensored. It's unscripted. We just sit down and we might have a vague idea of what we're going to talk about at the start of it, though a bunch of them we haven't. It's just been the, hey, let's get together and talk. And it turns out to be what it turns out to be.
Speaking of which, all right, so last month, you didn't have me on the mag dump. It was a sausage party. Mm-hmm. It's all boys. And, well, I feel a little left out. And so in retaliation, I guess you could say, I'm going to put together an all-girl mag dump. And everyone I have asked to be on has said yes. Now, schedules may conflict, but I have gotten yeses from Gunblog Variety Cast alumnae Beth Alcazar, Tiffany Johnson, plus my very good friend Sarah Cade, and Gail Pepin.
Oh.
Yes, I know. If I can get all of us together, it is going to be star-studded.
How could it be retaliation if we all win?
I like the way you think. So I don't yet know when this is going to happen. I've got to coordinate with people's schedules. And with the holidays coming, it's going to be crazy. So you may not hear it until January. But I'm definitely going to make this happen. And it's going to be wicked awesome.
Wicked awesome guy. Well, that's great to hear. So again, we talk about it at the end of the show. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about the Patreon group just to let people know that, you know, it's just a fun little way for those that give to us, for us to give back. So if you're interested, go check it out. And again, under no obligation, I'm not guilt tripping you. This is not a PBS telethon. That's just the, hey, if you'd like some more content, we have some more content. It just happens to be up for sale. So something you might not think about when using a knife is actually how the blade was ground. Oddball gives us some details on the different blade grind techniques and what are the advantages and disadvantages of them.
Welcome to Oddball's Corner Pocket. This week, I thought I'd talk about the various grinds that are commonly used and why you would use one over the other. Oh, and if you're into drinking games, you can take a shot every time I say grind in this segment. Warning, you may get alcohol poisoning. First, I think I should probably explain what I mean exactly by the grind. While there are some knives where the thickness of the blade is the same at the spine as it is where the edge or bevel actually starts, it's fairly standard for the knife's material to thin out at some point so that it's thicker at the spine than at the bevel. More material at the spine means the knife is stronger, but a thinner blade makes it easier to slice through things. Probably the most common is the saber grind. As the name implies, this was the standard grind with swords like the saber, and is kind of the default for knives. The sides of the blade are roughly parallel with each other at the spine. At some point, the grind starts with a very shallow angle on both sides, and then the angle is changed to a steeper bevel right at the edge. Like I said, this is pretty much the default, and it's pretty much the middle ground of all the grinds that I'm going to talk about. There's other options that are better slicers but aren't as strong. Others are stronger but harder to make and keep as sharp, etc. Honestly, whatever the purpose of the knife, I don't think you would be going wrong with this grind. It's also basically the grind that most other grinds are based on. The one that might be considered more basic than the saber grind is the Scandi grind. Basically, a Scandi grind is a saber grind that skips out on the bevel at the edge of the blade. This results in the angle at the edge being extremely narrow. This makes the knife an excellent slicer that can be extremely sharp. Unfortunately, there are a couple issues with this design. The first being the problem with any knife with a very narrow edge, namely a more fragile edge. It doesn't seem to be a huge deal if the manufacturer knows what they're doing. But I've seen reports of well-known knife makers come out with a Scandi grind knife that constantly had its edge roll on people. Another issue is that a lot of folks have issues with sharpening this type of grind. It's not so much that it's difficult, but that folks don't understand what they have. If you have one of these knives and you want to sharpen it, just think of the edge as the entire grind. Sharpening it at a more traditional angle will probably actually dull the blade, and you'll have to reprofile it. This grind's name comes from the fact that it's incredibly popular with Scandinavian knife manufacturers. In fact, the traditional Finnish Puukko knife uses this style of grind. Of course, I can't mention the Scandi grind without mentioning Mora knives and their excellent budget knives. Some other knife companies that put out good knives using this grind are Helle and Martini. So, if we go back to that saber grind and push that initial angle all the way to the spine, we've got what's called a full flat grind. The advantage of this is that the initial grind can be a little shallower. This makes it a little bit better at slicing, even though the angle of the actual edge may not change. Since the angle of the grind isn't much different than a good saber grind on a similar knife, you're also not losing much strength of the blade. I have been noticing that Spyderco has been putting out a lot of full flat grind knives in the past few years, and some other companies have pushed the initial grind on their saber grinds so far back that they might as well be full flat grinds. The classic way to have a better slicer than the saber grind is what's called a hollow grind. With a hollow grind, instead of having a set straight angle to your grind, the grind is actually a concave curve. This means that the blade thins out very quickly and stays at that narrow thickness right up to the bevel. I've seen this style grind on a lot of kitchen knives, and it does make for excellent slicers. Oh, and the stereotypical old-fashioned fold-out razor blade, that's also a hollow grind. The downside is that since more of the blade is thinner, it will make for a more fragile knife. On the other side of the coin is the convex grind. The best way to describe this is to think of a Spitzer bullet shape. That's basically the shape down the entire edge of the blade. That rounded edge means that there's a lot of material behind the cutting edge rather quickly, which means that the edge will be rather durable. The downside, as you can probably guess, is that it's a harder grind to get super sharp. The definition of this grind has more to do with the actual edge than the rest of the blade construction. So, it's possible to have a convex saber grind, convex full flat grind, etc. This grind is pretty much the default for axes, meat cleavers, and any other blade where they're used primarily for chopping and will probably hit something hard. I've also heard a number of people recommend it for survival knives. The last grind that I'm going to talk about is the chisel grind. It's the one grind on this list that's not essentially based on the saber grind. Simply put, this is the grind that you'd find on a chisel. One side of the knife is completely flat, while the other side slopes down to meet it. This means that the apex of the blade edge is actually off-center, and the blade will tend to cut in that direction. If you're going to sharpen one, other than making sure that the flat side remains flat, you should only sharpen the sloped side. This is generally considered a specialty grind, where you're using the tool to dig into something, like a chisel, or needing the shearing action of something like scissors. There are a couple instances where I've seen this grind used in knives, however. The most common is in very cheap blades, like my Leatherman Micra. By the way, I may rant about subpar blades on otherwise good multi-tools in the future. Oddly enough, the other use I've seen has been in some high-end traditional Japanese kitchen knives. Due to the way a chisel grind cuts, these knives are actually labeled for right-hand or left-hand use. I think that just about covers all the common grinds you'll find, so I'll stop here. Oh, and if you did decide to do the drinking game and are still upright, grind, grind, grind. Anyways, if you want to read more from me, I write at gunscarstech.com, and if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future segments, I can be reached at oddball@gunscarstech.com, or give me a shout on the ACP Facebook group. Until next time, have a good one.
Yeah, no, that Oddball, he's a right-how bastard.
Oddly enough, when I edited this segment to just do the post-production stuff to clean it up and just add the music to it, I was listening to it after I'd finished recording Handgun Radio, and I had had my beverage during Handgun Radio, and I felt like...
So you played the game.
I felt like having another beverage, and I was literally just... I had a glass of Wild Turkey, and I was literally just playing, I'm going to sip, not take a shot, but sip whenever he said the word grind. And about a minute in, I said, I'm not playing this game anymore. Literally, if you tried to play this game, you're not hearing me right now because you're dead. The EMTs are hearing this play through your earbuds.
And it's funny you mentioned Wild Turkey because that starred in what I thought was a rather humorous story that I told on our latest Mag Dump, which is going to release in about a week, about how I lost my alcohol virginity at age 21. So... look out for that next week. So in last week's Weird Audio Fisk, the segment took a curve. They started talking about the SHOT Show, and then it took a left turn into the internet gun show buying loophole thingamajigger. I know that sounds weird, but that's about as much thought as they put into it. In this week's segment, the same thing happens. The Young Turks start talking about the NRA and fairy tales, and then take a sharp 90-degree turn into craziness.
So this week's Fisk, I'm tackling an older video I found on the Young Turks show. They started out talking about a short-lived publication from the NRA family branch of the NRA.
The NRA has put out a number of fairy tales that appeal to children and basically give them the idea that guns are great and they're only there to protect them, which is probably a bad idea considering all the recent stories involving kids who come across guns and then use them to either shoot their siblings, themselves, or their parents.
So I don't know much about these children's books, except that the NRA no longer offers them, and they were discontinued fairly quickly. While it does seem a little silly, I can't completely agree with Anna Kasparian on all her points. First up, one of the core tenets of being anti-gun is never to admit that guns can save lives. This, of course, isn't true. And while there have been a bunch of news stories where kids find unsecured guns and injuries occur, I have never heard of a story where the child negligently handing the gun was a trained shooter. Say what you will about the NRA, but they are the number one resource for firearm safety training in this country, and their whole goal is to prevent such shootings. But what were these books about?
Little Red Riding Hood has a gun is the title of one of them, and Hansel and Gretel have guns that arm the main characters with firearms.
Okay, I'm interested.
One says, have you ever wondered what those same fairy tales might sound like if the hapless Red Riding Hoods, Hansel and Gretel's, had been taught about gun safety and how to use firearms?
No, so I never wondered that, actually.
No, neither have I. And so they're marketing guns toward children.
You haven't? Seriously? Maybe it's just a gun nut thing, but most fiction I often factor in, what if this character was concealed carrying? What if this character had a carbine in their trunk? It makes certain stories rather boring, like Hansel and Gretel, who were kidnapped by a damn witch.
Children should not have the ability to own guns, to fire guns, to play with guns, to be anywhere near guns. If you believe in the Second Amendment right, I get it, okay? But when you're making arguments that children need to be armed, well, then you've lost your mind.
Okay, so here's where we part ways. I see statements like this as a direct threat to gun culture in America and a threat to human life. As I said above, when you see shooting accidents, especially within the home, it's often from kids with near zero exposure to guns. I have a link in the show notes to Kathy Jackson's website, The Cornered Cat, where she talks about disarming kids' curiosity around guns. Of the youth shootings that weren't intentional homicides or suicides, one must assume raw curiosity was a major factor. Letting kids handle guns in a safe and controlled environment both teaches safe gun handling, but also removes their mystery and the desire to handle a gun in an unsafe environment. Range trips will not only teach safe handling and gun marksmanship, but it can also show that even a lowly 22 can do a lot of damage downrange, and solidify the lesson that guns demand respect at all times. Wanting to make it so kids can't handle firearms is not only a culture war against safe and responsible gun owners, but it would directly block safety training and add taboo curiosity of guns to the very young minds they're claiming to want to protect. But really, this is where the discussion of the NRA books ends, and they quickly degenerate to anti-gun boilerplate.
Some of those corporations make weapons, and they got to sell those weapons. Some of them are defense contractors, so they have to create more and more conflicts, more and more wars, because they have to maximize profit. They must do it. It's a fiduciary responsibility of theirs. And for gun makers inside our country, well, the more people who get killed, the more people are scared, the more people buy guns, the more they make money. So the more shootings there are and the more people who get killed, the more they will maximize profit.
Okay, I could dive into the standard rebuttal that the National Shooting Sports Foundation is the lobbying group for the gun makers and the NRA is there for gun owners. But really, the more poignant rebuttal I can make is how friggin' insane Cenk Unger is. Gun makers are manufacturing wars? Citation needed on that one, Cenk. As for the idea that gun makers want more bloodshed in the streets, well, first, let's step back and look at this ridiculous statement in terms of public panic. You don't generally get much public excitement from inner city gang violence. The massive amounts of death from gang conflicts in our major cities eclipses all other form of violent death in this country. Note, of course, that 60% of all gun death is suicide. And things like heart disease just eclipse everything I'm talking about. Seriously, check the show notes. I linked an article on the 12 leading causes of death in the United States, and it lists heart disease as over 630,000 deaths annually. So in talking about the epidemic of gun violence, as the anti-right activists have taken to doing, one must have a little bit of perspective. So if people aren't panicking about heart disease or gang violence, side note, when I went to Chicago for the gun rights policy conference, all my gun nut friends were like, Chicago? Are you sure that's a good idea? Everybody else was, Chicago? Cool! The gun-related events that dominated the headlines, if you haven't guessed it already, is spree killers. But spree killings are very rare and take only a fraction of the lives in the above causes of death in America. But when one happens, it's national news, often for days, if not weeks. Going on what passes for logic in Cenk Unger's head, if the NRA wanted more panic so it could gin up gun sales, then they would be for expanding gun-free zones. They'd be against concealed carry, and they wouldn't care a whit about background checks or red flag laws that take guns away from people without due process, because none of those laws would have stopped any of the spree killers we hear about ad nauseum in the news. And there is a lot of evidence that shows that spree killers seek out gun-free zones and places where concealed carry is not common because they do not want anybody shooting back. Really, it appears that the corporate anti-gun lobby is the one ginning up irrational fears to line their own pockets. It appears that way because it's true.
If you've already got 250 million guns in the country of a country of only 300 million people, you've literally almost got one gun per person in the country, well, then you got to start young. You got to start selling to the kids.
Now, Anna Kasparian touched lightly on this. It's a straw man argument. As far as the federal government and the gun industry is concerned, you can't sell guns to kids. In most states, it's legal for minor children to own and possess firearms in one way or another, but all guns manufactured or imported into the United States may only be sold through a licensed dealer. And those dealers may only conduct a sale to an adult, 18 or older for long guns, 21 or older for handguns. And it's the current agenda of the corporate anti-gun lobby to make all gun sales 21 plus. These guns can only then be gifted by an adult to the children. Marketing guns to kids is a losing proposition. Besides them not being able to walk into a shop and buy one, guns are expensive. Just looking at some of the online dealers, a single shot Cricket 22 is over $100 new. Now there's a market for youth guns. Abstinence-only education is proven not to work. But you can't drive an industry that way. Really, the largest growing field in the gun world is the shift from gun owners being rural people who use their guns for hunting and farm maintenance to people who are urban and suburban who are more oriented to protection and target shooting. These people who generally don't hunt and legally can't shoot on their property were a neglected market for ages. So while your rural hunter has a safe filled with guns, and even country houses where the occupants don't shoot much, there was a gun or two tucked away. Until recently, owners in the large cities were fairly rare. Now those people are buying guns, and this is why the industry is growing. And you want to talk about something that is good for marketing for gun makers, it's three-gun competition. Not only do you need competition gear, but you need three guns, and once somebody starts competing, they want to upgrade those guns.
Think about arguments that have been made against legalizing marijuana. Well, if we legalize it, then kids are going to have access to it, right?
Yeah.
We're worried about marijuana, okay, which, by the way, I don't want kids smoking marijuana, and if we legalize it, there'd be regulations to prevent that.
Another straw man. Let's take a step back. Many states, including Massachusetts, have legalized, at least on a local level, recreational use of marijuana. And much like alcohol, there are age restrictions. But let's step off into absurdity just to clear the waters. Let's talk about heroin. Nobody is trying to legalize smack right now, and there are no states where heroin is legal for any reason. Now, in some countries like Canada, doctors can prescribe diacetylmorphine, aka heroin, to patients for a variety of reasons. They can't do that in the United States. So all that being said, are kids using heroin in the United States? Unfortunately, they are, and that isn't good. The same goes for kids carrying guns around illegally on the streets of Chicago. Children who are trained by their families and friends to safely and responsibly use a firearm are not part of any problem in this country. There's more, but I'm going to have to tackle that next week. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them.
So one thing that just immediately popped into my mind when they were all verklempt about fairy tales and firearms, and I'm going, that is exactly the reason why the Monster Hunter International series is so freaking popular.
Again, like I said, like when I'm watching a movie, I'm like, oh man, that would be so much easier if they were carrying a gun. In the Gerard Butler movie, Law Abiding Citizen, he's this like super genius spy, but he gets taken down by like the most amateur home invasion known to man. And that's always bugged me. Of the, all right, he's so smart that he can do all this stuff, but he doesn't conceal carry when he's at home or at least keep a shotgun by the door. So yeah, I always think about in fairy tales of the, oh yeah. As a matter of fact, I was reading Hansel and Gretel to my daughter just before we started recording this. And I'm like, yeah, you shoot the witch in the face.
Now, they had the vapors regarding teaching kids firearm safety. And I think I've mentioned this before here on the podcast. I know I've talked about it before in general. But when I was young enough to be interested in guns and I was at the age when I could conceivably pull the trigger, so I don't know, 5, 6, 7, my parents took me into their bedroom. They had their guns out on the bed. And of course, they were unloaded. And they said, okay, these are our guns. We know that you're curious. So go ahead and look at them. And if you have any questions, let us know. And you know, I picked one up. And the first thing I did was I looked down the barrel because that's what kids do. And I was taught, no, 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 don't do that. And my parents made it so boring that it's like, okay, yeah, I understand. Don't look down the barrel. Don't pull the trigger. All right. This is dull. They're heavy. They don't do anything. They don't light up. They don't make noise. Can I go play with my toys now? And they said, yeah, sure. And I really did not care about firearms until well after puberty. And I don't understand why more families don't do this. You made a great line, and it's one that I've said before, the bit about abstinence-only firearm education. And I don't understand why some people think that's the way to go. It doesn't work for sex education. We've had decades to prove this. So why are we repeating the same failed policy for firearm safety education? Abstinence does not work.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've done the same thing with my daughter. I was just a little bit standoffish on it, but when she was 4, I ended up getting a package delivered that was a rifle because I've got a CNR. And I'm like, I've got this. I've got to immediately go lock it up in the safe. And my daughter's with me. So I'm like, all right. Yep. It's a rifle. Here it is. And we're going to go lock it up in the safe. And opened up the safe. And she suddenly realizes, oh my goodness, daddy's got big metal boxes that are filled with guns. And so we spent a lot of time, you know, pulling out, looking and all that. And she specifically wanted me to take all of them apart. And was like, literally like no, take the trigger out too. And I'm like, I'm not going to take the trigger out, sweetie. This is all you need to do to take it apart. And we went hot and heavy with guns for like 45 minutes. And again, she knew Eddie Eagle and all the safety stuff. And then I taught her more of the stuff. You don't point them at people. You don't put your finger on the trigger and all that. She actually took really well to it. And we went hot and heavy with it. And then never asked ever again. I think she might have asked one other time to see a gun. And I'm like, yep, cool. Here it is. And that's it. It's been like 3 or 4 months since she has seen or handled any sort of gun. And yep, doesn't care. Whatever. She even handled her gun. So she knows she has a gun. Yep. When you're a little bit older, we'll go shoot it. And has not asked again of the, oh, when do I get to go shoot my gun? So she's not ready yet. But again, super boring. It's there. It exists. I don't care. It's no big deal. And that does a wonderful thing. And also, another thing you mentioned at the top of the show was the culture war side of it. Is I think some of this, children should never be allowed to touch a gun. And certainly people have introduced legislation to literally make it a crime to hand, like, I think one of them was like a child under the age of 16. If you let them have physical contact with a firearm, that was a crime. And I see that as absolutely the culture war, because so many of us grew up shooting. And is one of those like, yeah, no, as soon as you are old enough to be able to responsibly shoot, I'm teaching you how to shoot because that makes you safe. And that might get you to fall in love with guns. And they want to stomp that out.
Thanksgiving has already come and gone, but David is still feeling plenty thankful. Lean back, loosen your belt, and have another slice of pie as he tells us all the things he's thankful for having.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. Since this episode will be released following the week of Thanksgiving, I wanted to take this opportunity to share some of the things I'm thankful for. First and foremost, I'm thankful for my wife. You folks only have to deal with me for a few minutes a week. She puts up with me every day and hasn't smothered me in my sleep. Yet. As I mentioned in another segment, she had never even touched a firearm when we met, and now she reminds me we haven't gone shooting recently. After that, I'm thankful that I was born in America. This is basically like winning the lottery of life. No matter how bad my circumstances were at any given time over the years, just by being an American, I was better off than most people in the rest of the world. I'm thankful that the founders of this nation specifically enshrined in the Constitution and Bill of Rights the ideals of and protections for individual liberty. As we all know, the American system isn't perfect, but it's still better than any other anywhere else in the world today or in history. I'm thankful for the genius and vision of such people as Samuel Colt, Oliver Winchester, Rollin White, Horace Smith and Daniel Wesson, Benjamin Tyler Henry, Edward Boxer, John Browning, and many others, as well as the people lost to history who first developed gunpowder. These people, and others too numerous to mention, are responsible for my ability to live my lifestyle in reasonable security and have given me years of enjoyment, as well as most of the topics for my podcast segments. I'm thankful for the firearms community, both internet and meat space, also known as the real world. Some of my closest friends, not all of whom I've met in person, are from this community. Something I learned fairly early in my adult life was that firearm owners in general are some of the nicest and most generous people you're likely to meet. Imagine going to a classic car rally. You stop to admire one of the cars on display. What are the chances that the owner's going to say to you, "Here are the keys. Go ahead. Take her for a spin." Not very likely. I'm sure most gun owners have been at the range and expressed admiration for another person's firearm. In my experience, the question, "Do you want to shoot it?" is a very common follow-up to this. I'm thankful that I've had the opportunity and ability to pass on the firearms knowledge I've gathered over the years to other gun owners, both experienced and beginner. I hope I've also been able to share with them my passion for both the subject of firearms and individual freedom. I know that for some of the people I've taught about firearms, I was their first positive experience on that subject. Prior to my instruction, their only exposure to firearms was via some combination of television, movies, or video games. Strange as this may sound, I'm thankful that I was born and lived in New York, even though I've spent my adult life moving away from there. Having grown up in New York City and lived in semi-rural upstate New York has given me a somewhat unique outlook on New York politics. However, now that we've moved to the South, I do sometimes feel obligated to preface answering the question, "Where are you from?" with some version of, "Don't hold this against me, but I'm from New York," due to the negative stereotype of New Yorkers in most of the rest of the country. Speaking of the South, I'm thankful for our new home in the South and our Southern family. I was surprised at how quickly we built a social circle of close friends. Southern hospitality is a real thing, and I'm grateful for that. I'm thankful that while I have some health issues, none of them are debilitating and they allow me to live my life in relative comfort. Yes, certain activities are limited, and I do have a certain amount of chronic pain, but as the saying goes, every day above the grass is a good day. Speaking of which, I'm thankful that both my parents are still living. I know too many friends who have lost one or both, some at quite young ages. While I don't get to see my parents as often as I or they would like, I try to give them a call every weekend. As my parents are both in their 80s, I know that their time here is limited, and I want to make the most of what they have left. I'm thankful for the affectionate, silly, and slightly insane cats that we share our house with. That we never know where the hallway or entrance rugs will be any given morning, or if their water bowl has been emptied on the kitchen floor, is a small price to pay for the pleasure we get from their company. Finally, I'm thankful for Aaron for nudging me to get in touch with Weird about joining the Assorted Calibers podcast, and Weird for approving my somewhat odd segment idea. I've made some new friends and learned some new things from this association. Thank you both for organizing this, and thanks to all the other contributors for their segments. In closing, I hope everyone listening had a happy Thanksgiving surrounded by your friends and families, biological or chosen, and that you are prepared for the official start of Christmas season. Let the endless Christmas music commence! That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
That was a good one. It's just nice to sit back and be thankful for. And it's always good to thank John Moses Browning. Someday I'll make the pilgrimage to Ogden.
So this is completely irrelevant other than Utah. But next February, I'm actually going to be in Provo, Utah. I have been invited to not just attend, but be a panelist at the Life, the Universe, and Everything convention in February. And so if you are in the area, come by, say hi, give me a hug.
What kind of a convention is that?
It is a convention for writers. And the short explanation is they try to get a panel of subject matter experts, and the writers are there to ask them things so that the writers know what they're writing about. The classic example is, here's talking about guns for people who don't know about guns, so that when you write your scene, you're not going to have someone clicking an external safety off of their Glock.
That's awesome. So are you gonna make it to Ogden? I don't even know how close Provo is to Ogden.
I actually don't know. All I know is I'm gonna be in Utah, and I have a lot of people who live there who are friends of mine who wanna talk to me. So I'm jokingly calling it Mormon Quest 2019.
That's awesome.
But getting back on topic here, apparently it's steal from Aaron night, because first you took my line about abstinence only gun education, and now David is using my comparison of classic car owners to gun owners. Where's it gonna end?
Aaron isn't wrong.
Ah, I kid. It's all good. I like feeling quotable.
The ACP house dick is, as usual, in the field. He was tailing a target today, and he wondered if we'd like to ride shotgun. Of course we would.
Good afternoon, faithful listeners. Welcome to another episode of Tales from the Trunk. I am, as always, your friendly neighborhood trunk monkey, Steve. And I'm bringing you with me on a surveillance pursuit. Well, I needed some content, so I figured I might as well fire it up while I am running a tail. I've got a partner. He's a couple miles behind me, and I'm observing our target vehicle from the front. I'm about five or six cars up on the freeway. We had the added benefit of being able to place a beacon on this particular car, because she has been suspicious in the past, and this allows us some measure of discretion. So, I'm going to take you along with me for the next couple minutes as we drive from an appointment of hers back to her residence. One of the benefits of this particular file is long hours. We've worked this case dozens of days over the last month and a half. We had some cross-state border shenanigans. which of course make everybody stay a little longer and make situations pretty sporty. You guys remember my commentary maybe a week or two back about my partner being pulled over by Ohio Highway Patrol. Yeah, it's pretty much the same case. So that's another reason for the beacon. It gives us plenty of distance. And I'm actually watching her in my rearview mirrors, which makes driving rather interesting. And it just makes for a nice casual drive in traffic. No gridlock, no construction right now because in the winter, construction mostly stops. I do have to worry about being Larry Leadfoot in order to stay ahead of this particular individual because she likes to lay on the gas. And, well, this little four-banger ninja wagon does not like doing over 90. I've gotten her over 90 plenty of times, but this car is prone to wanting to kill me, so I try to keep the abuse of this vehicle to a bare minimum. I had hoped to be at home in time for supper, but it looks like my day is going to run long. I mean, but it's money. The clients are happy with the results so far. Partner I've got for this particular case is good people. Faithful, loyal, and dedicated worker. He knows his stuff, and I don't have to worry about coaching him. He's got a couple years of experience, not as much as me, and the cops are out writing tickets. Holy cow. Wow, that was three units, three different cars, all pulled over, and all three of the cops had their ticket books out. So they're not messing around on a Monday, especially before the holiday weekend. So hopefully the audio is clear enough. I'm sure you guys are dealing with plenty of road noise, and Weird will work his post-production magic. Things in Ninjaville are rather busy, semi-chaotic. There's a new Ninja HQ, and otherwise life is good. The office has been moved. Business projects are increasing. My workload is getting crazy. But more work means Ninja is relatively heavy, and it keeps him out of trouble. It does cut down on range time, however. So I'm a little cranky about that. And I really don't want to go play with guns in the snow, but that's almost a foregone conclusion at this point as we approach Thanksgiving. So I'm going to keep this segment rather short and sweet before I get too far ahead of my target. Of course, the beacon will get me right where I need to be. But you guys have an enjoyable turkey day. Don't eat too much stuffing. Enjoy that turkey coma. And I'll see you guys next week. Remember, stay ninja.
Oh, man. Yeah, of course we'd like to go for you tailing. Like, that was actually kind of exciting.
So, you're saying that Steve has a nice tail?
No, I mean, he was tailing from the front with a chase car in the rear. I want to hear more on that. Steve, really, talk about the different ways to tail. I know about a bunch, like running parallels and things like that, but I think people would want to hear somebody else talk about it besides a PI aficionado versus an actual PI.
Yeah, I think he's going to need to give us a masterclass on tailing.
I can't not laugh.
The house dick on tails.
Needs to be done, Steve. Listen to it. Also, for the patrons, as an added bonus, since Steve was on the highway on that, there was a ton of road noise. You probably picked up some anyway, because there's only so much I can do. But I promised a while back, I think it was before I left for Chicago, I would publish the unedited audio of that so you could hear what I was dealing with. I actually went through and just cut a little short segment where I put equal cuts of before and after side by side so you could hear how it sounds on the show and then how it sounded when I got it. So it's just a little bit of fun going on what we do to fix it in post. So thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcaliberspodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels and the new ACP film tracks and ACP mag dump. You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
You can read more from me at lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com, bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com, blazingsword.org, and pinkpistols.org.
Thanks to Nate Spencer for our wonderful music.
So this is actually a first. I'm going to use a closer that was contributed by one of our listeners, Mr. Kirk Lawson on Facebook. And he talked about the recent sad death of Roy Clark and how it reminded him of the end of every one of our podcasts. And so in that vein, I'm a picking, and he's a grinning, and our calibers are assorted, and so is our podcast. Good night, everybody.
That's great. Good night, everybody.